Hello, before the show begins, a little thing from me, old BP. I last year made a short film starring none other than Mike Wozniak and Chris Cantrell and Sammy Dobson and a cameo from Amy Gledhill. And it's finally ready to be seen. And I'm putting on a screening in Cardiff on Sunday. That's Sunday, the 23rd of March. It's at 2:30 p.m. at Chapter Art Centre. I'll put a link in the show notes if you fancy buying a ticket. Not only am I showing my short film, because it's only 15 minutes long, there's some other things I'm showing as well. I'm showing a short film by someone known as Mike Wozniak. He wrote and directed a short film called Sump a few years ago. So I'm going to show that. Also Neckface by Sean Harris. And which was directed by Torin Westcott and written by a friend of mine called James Bug. So yes, if you fancy coming to watch my new short film, it's called Daddy Superior. It features Mike in a monk costume. That's sexy, sexy monk. Come and watch it on Sunday. I would love to see you there. All right, on with the show.
Ben Partridge, I'm very much aware of something, which is you've been to Kazakhstan, and every week that passes, that it gets a week further into the past that it happened.
It's too long ago now, and also I can't remember, and also I don't have any anecdotes.
So, is this like when we're saying it's too late to say happy birthday? Sort of, has it passed that the equivalent in anecdote terms?
I think we've just got quite good at cliffhanger endings, hasn't it? We set up a degree of expectation for the listener that they might hear about something, and then they don't. I was asked at a gig about how my Christmas dinner went.
Oh, we got an email about this.
It's in the long distant past.
It's the breadcrumbs, isn't it, that we scatter so adeptly. We scatter these little breadcrumbs, and the audience are like little sparrows, aren't they? And they flutter down and they alight on a branch, and they look down and they see the breadcrumbs and they try and work out other breadcrumbs spelling some sort.
Read the breadcrumbs.
They're trying to read the breadcrumbs, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they follow the trail of breadcrumbs. Where is this taking us?
Yeah.
And it's just into an oven.
It's to a trap.
Yeah. It's just into an oven, yeah. Sorry, guys. Well, look, me think someone is protesting too much about a lack of anecdotes, potentially. Mike, do you agree with Ben? I think Ben's probably sitting on something quite special that happened in Kazakhstan. But let's face it, if you go to Kazakhstan, you at least if you don't get a good anecdote out of it, surely, is there an insurance?
Anecdote insurance.
Yeah, anecdote insurance, surely. You should have, Ben, don't tell me you didn't take anecdote insurance.
I did, but unfortunately I've already voided that because it was it last episode or the episode before I talked about walking over a sheet of frozen horse shit. And that was that counted as a Kazakhstan based anecdote.
Yes, we have had and the freezing cold man as well.
Yeah, exactly. I've already finished you.
It was barely an anecdote, but as you say, you will have avoided the you've avoided it through that. Such a shame. Well, let's at least explain to the audience that you went to Kazakhstan.
Okay, so my feelings are this. I'm not sure the audience want to listen to what I did on my holidays.
Ben, that has never, ever been one of our guiding principles. If anything, quite the reverse. So that's null. First point, null. Yeah. Carry on.
Two, what do you want to know?
It's an incredibly passive-aggressive start to an anecdote, but I like it. It's got me on edge. punk.
We've also had the near-fatal down coat anecdote.
Yeah, I feel like I've given you my anecdotes.
You've actually dripped us a few. But more generally, just can you just give us some thoughts on Kazakhstan? And also just give us some basic facts. Like, how long were you there for?
Okay, I was there for something like 12 days.
Okay, so data. Let's have a data-heavy approach to this anecdote.
Yeah. On the plane over, I watched two films.
Okay, this is good.
Okay, this is more like it.
I watched The Apprentice, which is that film about Donald Trump.
Oh, have you seen that?
Thought I wasn't going to be in the mood for because obviously, world events. But actually, it's a really good film.
Okay, nice.
Then I watched Kramer vs. Kramer.
A classic.
God, you went heavy for a plane. I don't think I've ever gone that heavy on a plane before.
Well, as soon as you're on the plane, you're just shouting the words Marley and me, aren't you? That's the thing. This plane better have Marley and me. Or you're going to need an air marshal to deal with what's going to happen.
And that's why you now bring, don't you, your stuffed toy Marley. There was some merch, wasn't there? That film did have some merch. Most of it was bought by Mike. So yeah. Mike's got a stuffed Marley, which is your support animal, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Because you say, I'm Marley and me, so I've done my bit. There's Marley and there's me.
This is Marley and this is me.
And I insist on everyone whose screen I can see is also playing Marley and me.
That's
so
right.
That's my version of 3D, basically. That's the closest I can get Marley and me to being a 3D film.
Instead of looking at any kind of instruments or readings, the pilot should be watching Marley and me as
they
well.
They should be watching or reciting sections of Marley and me. That's what autopilot is for, so that they can do little Marley and me pastiches.
And you insist that the food, there's an option, there's the chicken, there's a vegetarian, or there's the stir-fried Labrador.
That's right. Isn't it?
You insist that that's an option.
Chicken and me, stir-fry and me.
Yeah.
Everything is themed. And you, instead of cutlery, they give you little sort of plastic paws that you can...
little plastic paws.
You can dig your way through the...
Yeah.
Through the wrapping into the meal. Yeah, so I couldn't go Kramer.
So Kramer and Kramer, that's a 70s classic. It's Hoffman and Meryl Streep.
I think it's Meryl Streep's first big role, potentially. It's what brought her to the world's attention, I think.
And she never took her foot off the gas.
She really didn't,
really
did she,
didn't.
Mike?
Didn't. Bonjo, that feels like quite a cool film to be on, to be available in a plane. Am I right in thinking that you flew out in a quite a cool sort of indie airline or something, where everything was a bit 70s themed?
Might have just been a 70s plane. Was it? Was it a VHS box that you had to put in the seat in front of you? You sort of prang into the mid back of the passenger in front of you.
You wanted a full Cold War Kazakhstan experience, didn't you? Everything. That was the package that you went for. 70s plane, 70s values.
Yeah. You only have to man the gun turret for 30% of the journey.
So I flew with Air Astana, which is the national carrier of Kazakhstan.
Okay.
Nice.
Do you like to go with the national server, the national carrier of a country?
No, I think it's the only airline that flies there.
Okay, yeah, that's often that's often the way with your chosen holiday destination, I think we can say.
It's either that or being smuggled over a mountain pass, isn't it?
Yeah.
On camelback.
Because often the places you're going, Ben, they get more gun running than tourism, don't they? So a lot of the time your best option is to sort of disguise yourself as an Uzi or as an AK-47, isn't it?
It's the smoothest way through the Carpathians, isn't it?
A lot of the time it is. Because also they don't want the guns to go off, and the same so actually they're treating the guns.
Yeah, so you don't have to load yourself, do you?
So you're in a sort of velvet papoose, or aren't you, a lot of the time?
Wrapped in a series of oiled rags.
Yeah. And you've got the thing, but you can only tell how far you are because you have to look through the, what do you call it? The silencer. You can only see what you can see. In terms of, you don't get to enjoy the views of the Carpathians that much, do you?
Yeah. I mean, we don't know much about gun anatomy. I think if you're looking through the silencer, you're in deep shit.
That means you're loaded and the safety's probably off. And it turns out you've actually been conned and you're actually going to be used as an untraceable human bullet in the assassination of the Kazakh war chief. Yeah.
Totally biodegradable.
Totally biodegradable.
Totally takeawayable by eagles.
And also, Ben, because he's eating carvery so much, he doesn't really have dental records as such. They're not...
Well, I got them replaced by mini steak knives.
Exactly. Which actually makes you even more lethal as a bullet as well.
The selection wasn't that broad. It had a couple of modern films, for example, the Donald Trump one I watched.
Yeah.
Then they decided to go big on Hoffman. So it was like a handful of modern films, about 10 Hoffmans.
They got the Hoffman package.
I think that they, to be fair to them, I think every month they have a different...
Different 70s actor.
Because I think it might be Renée Zellweger next month, based on the magazine.
That would be reason enough to commute there on a regular basis.
Yeah. So they've got like a sort of curated cinema sort of sense. You know, it's more like the BFI.
Which the world is ready for, right? Yeah. We have too much choice. So many... It's become a cliche of... Like not choosing anything on Netflix of an evening, hasn't it?
That's a good point.
To have it curated, have some limits.
You know what? I'm flying to. I'm going to Kazakhstan next week. Why is that? Because I've never actually seen Bridget Jones 2.
And you just need that push.
Sometimes you just need that push.
You want to do the big Bridget Jones 2/ Cold Mountain? 1-2.
Yeah, the DVDs have been on your bedside table for years. You just haven't got around to it.
So alongside the movie selection. There was also a little TV tab on the touchscreen. On the TV thing, it was all Kazakh TV, apart from I could watch an entire series of Billions starring Paul Giamatti.
Which I've heard is very good. Is it good?
I don't know. I didn't watch it, but I had like 20 episodes of that.
Yeah.
But also there was a thing where you could watch the CEO of Aristana giving prizes to children.
Nice. Oh, that's nice.
I like that a lot.
That is nice. By the way, if you are thinking of taking out anecdote insurance, don't buy the stuff they try and sell you at the airports, please, because they'll rip you off. If you go online, go to one of the comparison websites. There's really good. I'm looking here. Tesco's are offering 2 weeks anecdote insurance for £19.87.
They've got quite a good anecdote exchange rate as well.
Yes.
Yeah, but also don't go for the cheapest one because.
Yep.
For example, I know someone who took out anecdote insurance, went on holiday. There was nothing noteworthy to talk about.
Right.
So they put in a claim and they got back to them and said, oh, here's your holiday anecdote. And it was just, oh, mushrooms were really expensive there in the supermarket.
Yeah.
And that's barely an anecdote.
It's not enough.
You know, so it's there's anecdotes enough. And anecdotes.
I actually heard a horrible case about a company. A guy made a claim. He said he didn't have an anecdote on holiday. And they said, yes, you did. You've just told us it. Didn't they try to claim that not having the anecdote was the anecdote?
They'll often try and just give you the squits, the basic squits package as well.
Yeah, it's not good enough anymore.
No.
Maybe in the 70s, but people expect more now, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, so get on those comparison websites.
Direct Line's always been good for me.
They've got a very good paragliding and jet ski disaster anecdote package as well.
They do. It's real edge of your seat stuff, isn't it?
And you can also get non-fatal banana boat anecdote, which is quite good.
If you get non-fatal banana boat coverage, that's really worth it. And often you can just tick that and it'll be added on for like £10. And it's definitely worth it.
I actually think just go with the big hitter, actually. Just go with Grisham. You know, you'll get something.
You'll get a complicated legal drama you can talk about.
You get a complicated legal drama. But what's brilliant is they can set an entire sort of complicated legal drama all over the course of a sort of breakfast buffet in a sort of four-star resort hotel. They can make it work.
Do you not find though, Henry, that often if you make a claim with Grisham and you get your anecdote through, and then you go and see your mum or your auntie or whatever, and they say, "Oh, how was your holidays?" and you say, "Well, it all started when I graduated top of my class, Harvard Law."
Yeah. And it ends with you having to garrote an omelette chef to death. Yes.
But this is why it's such a game, isn't it? That they play with you because they know that, and they know that that's why they want you to upgrade to the Matthew Mahoney.
Yeah, the Matthew Mahoney.
And then Matthew Mahoney will come with you, and he will relate the anecdote in the first person, and you're part of the anecdote. And
I would avoid the Stoppard package.
It's willfully impenetrable.
It's willfully impenetrable stuff you'll end up with.
Yeah. But it's so enriching.
It's enriching, but can anyone really be asked with it?
Good advice.
Kramer versus Kramer.
Such a good film.
That's a film which is quite often talked about in reference to its there's a lot of preppy clothing in it.
The clothing is fantastic.
Yeah, the clothing is good. The wardrobe's good, isn't it?
Yeah, so you know how you and I, Henry, are disciples of Derek Guy, the man on Twitter who talks about menswear?
That's right.
I realised a lot of the photographs he uses to talk about good clothes are just screen grabs from Kramer versus Kramer.
So
they are.
So it's Kramer. He'll be wearing like a really cool sports coat.
With a
really
denim jacket underneath. He's mixing like Western wear and preppy American clothes. Wow. It's all good stuff.
He looks absolutely brilliant.
He's got some lovely little trainers he wears on his weekend.
He's got a sort of sporty look, but it's never referred to it's not like a part of his character that exists in the script in any way, is it?
No.
Like this superbly dressed guy.
Yeah. He's just nailing casual wear, basically.
He's nailing casual wear in a way that me and Ben aspire to, don't we?
Yeah, but I'm getting nowhere near.
I mean, today, for example, I'm wearing a simple blue T-shirt. Yeah.
But what a beautiful cut.
What a beautiful cut. But I've noticed something I do. I know this isn't for the listeners, this is for the viewers. But because I seem to feel
quite coquettish with your shoulders. Is that what you're about to say?
Very coquettish.
Yeah.
I banter in a sort of side saddle.
Yeah.
You are bantering in side saddle.
Yeah. It's like we're on you're on a third date with a Southern Belle.
Yeah. It looks like every sentence is going to end with the words, "chase me," is what it looks like.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I think there's a marriage proposal on the horizon, but there's two or three other suitors that you're competing with.
But what does Daddy
with.
Have to say about it is the big question, isn't it?
Also, one of the suitors is huge in oil. Mm-hmm. One of them is huge in
ranches.
Ranches.
Duck hunting.
Yeah. And you, all you've got is an idea for a dressing. So you've got an idea for a salad dressing. which means that you feels like you're probably not that good a match. But that dressing is.
I'm not sure that Daddy's gonna like mustard and cranberry. And he's so busy with the gubernatorial elections at the moment. I don't think we should tell him.
It'll wreak havoc with his reflux. Oh, Daddy.
Oh, Daddy.
Cut to 10 years in the future. I do love mustard and cranberry. He's his grandchildren. They've had two children called Mustard and Cranberry.
Yeah.
But the salad thing didn't work out.
No, of course it didn't.
And they're living in penury.
And actually, ironically, they can't get mustard and cranberry to mix that well. The two siblings don't get on, which was also the same problem as with the dressing. You can't get mustard and cranberry to mix because one of them is a sugar-based fruit and the other one is a fat-based sauce. They can't mix. One sits on top of the other.
It's first principle stuff, guys. Come on.
It's first principle.
And that's why Kerrigan's cranberry failed.
Yeah. Can I say, we did actually, I think it's important that the audience knows, that listeners know this. We did try bring them a mustard merch, a Kerrigan sauce, didn't we?
Well, you say we.
Yeah, we.
Your input was, I told you about it, and you went, oh yeah, sounds all right.
Yeah, but Ben, you're paying for my experience. You're not paying for the actual words. You're paying for my experience.
And how did your experience come to bear on my experience of trying to get a mustard off the ground?
Well, I think I let you know that I was slightly sceptical about it.
You're right to be.
I was up for it if it worked out. If it didn't work out, I was probably retrospectively not up for it.
Well, post-Brexit, I mean, every man and his dog was trying to start their own mustard, weren't they?
That's the trouble, wasn't it?
That's what we were promised.
It was the mustard avalanche, wasn't it?
That's what we said.
That happened.
Yeah.
The mustard markets got completely full.
Yeah.
You literally couldn't buy mustard on the NASDAQ for 24 hours. They completely froze all mustard sales.
So I don't think I actually ever sent you the emails I got. So I found a company that does what's called white label mustard.
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
So that is, they make it, the white label means you can then put your own label on it. It becomes your product, right?
Oh, I see. Is that a little bit illicit?
No.
I think it's disingenuous.
Okay. Because you could put on it, Uncle Barry's homemade traditional mustard sauce, whatever,
yes,
and that
which would be
a complete
catastrophic
lie.
From a marketing point of view.
It's another one of the reasons it didn't work.
When people think mustard, they think Uncle Barry.
There are two things that consumers don't trust. One is the idea, never trust. One is the idea of uncles, and the other is anyone called Barry. You combine the two, you've got a nexus of the worst branding of all time. It's true, because uncles are inherently untrustworthy, as are Barrys.
So I was in email conversation with a woman called Carol. Mm-hmm. This is her email. I can certainly help you develop a project to sell for Christmas, but we would need to move very swiftly.
Oh, I like that. Ben, I like this. This is the cutting edge of sauce. People didn't realise what it's like in the sauce business. It's so ruthless.
You waste time. Don't waste our time. Time is money is mustard.
Yeah. You got money is mustard.
Please see the different mustards we have as standard. I'm happy to send you a sample of the items you choose. Ooh. You're welcome to email any further questions you may have. I look forward to hearing from you. Kind regards, Carol.
So was she offering to email you a sample?
Yes.
She's offering to email me a sample.
That feels...
It's the future of mustard.
So are we talking about 3D mustard printing?
We're talking e-mustard.
We're talking e-mustard.
Which knows no borders.
Even in the most pessimistic doomsday scenarios about AI, I've not heard anyone talk about e-mustard. That is grim. Sorry, I really didn't enjoy that hot dog. Oh, yeah, sorry, I forgot to attach the mustard to the email.
Then I replied to Carol. Hi, Carol. Seeing as we need to be swift, maybe we could make this a phone call.
Bloody hell. Get a room. Because if you were to have had an illicit affair with Carol over this whole thing, because obviously when you're dealing with... source stuff at high level.
They do whatever it takes.
But also, it's such heady stuff that you just like, you know, it's like Matt Hancock having that affair. But Ben, imagine if you'd had a heady affair with Carol during this. I'm not saying you did, and I'm not saying you didn't. Just the amount of times you'd have both used the word saucy as a double entendre. Yeah.
Then Carol sent me a list of the private label
God, this is getting so bloody hard.
Products private. That they could create.
Oh my God, every single word is just the private levels of the hot sauce. What? This is fucking like a Mills and Boone.
Henry, it wasn't just mustard we could have created.
Oh yeah.
What?
Pumpkin pie curd.
Right, you've lost me there. That was disgusting. All right, you've gone to, yeah. It was erotica, but now it's turned into something just properly vile.
Ugh. Quince jelly with rose petals.
Oh, wow. You could have spread that over the bed. If you're having an illicit affair,
Yeah. You
could have spread that over the bed.
And then as things begin to hot up, I crack out the spicy Caribbean chutney. brackets, banana.
Oh, God. That does not sound that nice.
It's powerfully emetic for the purging phase of the lovemaking.
Oh, my God. So that was all stuff that we could have had in the merch store.
What was fun about it, I've never felt more like an apprentice candidate before. That was quite good fun.
Yeah.
But the problems I ran into were as follows. The main one being we'd have to have registered with the council as a food business.
Well, three. Also, we're called Three Bean Salad. Would that have helped or hindered or not?
They would have just shut us down immediately. The whole thing, everything.
So Three Bean Salad would have to register as a food business.
Yes.
Primarily? And podcasting as a kind of, as part of the marketing.
What I sort of became aware of is that we'd become personally responsible for if anyone, for example, bought some Thai-style chutney brackets, hot tomato with Thai spices, and then got botulism and shut themselves to death. That would be our fault.
No, but it would have been your fault.
But it would be my fault. I sort of then began to realise that actually becoming a food business is quite like a big... You've got a lot of responsibilities there.
Yeah. You're stepping over a threshold into a different level of responsibility.
That's even higher than podcasting.
Even higher than what we do.
Yeah, so that's what could have been. We could have... I've still kind of got like a little burning light that one day we will produce Kerrigan's mustard, but it isn't Kerrigan's time.
It's Kerrigan's time. It's Kerrigan's time.
Bring me the Kerrigan's. Bring me the Kerrigan's.
It's Kerrigan's time.
It isn't Kerrigan's time yet. But who knows?
I also just pictured myself packing and sending hundreds of jars of mustard and that taking about 2 months of my time.
Yeah, this is a solo effort, for sure. Yeah.
And you'd have got repetitive strain mustard. You'd have ended up with sort of mustard, like sort of...
Dijon arm.
Dijon arm. You'd have had a very clear nose and throat, though.
That's true. And, of course, whole grain stools.
Okay, let's turn on the big machine.
Yes, please.
This week's topic, as sent in by Matt.
Thank you, Matt.
From Chester upon Bremen. And he would have sent that in, by the way, by going to enterthebeammachine.boats. That's enterthebeammachine.boats. The topic is gardening.
Ooh, gardening.
Oh. I didn't have much gardening experience. I don't have a garden.
Yeah.
Actually, both of you have gardens, so...
Your flat has a kind of garden that's
well, I've got a fungal. Are you talking about the fungal gardens, like on the end of both of my feet? Because I do see it as a form of gardening, isn't it? Because it's nature. It's untrammeled nature in theory.
Yeah, you've got rewilded feet.
I've got, and actually, maybe it's time to announce this. My feet are the first feet in the UK to have beavers reintroduced to them.
Yeah, but it's uncontrolled. I'm a bit worried about that because there's no... When's the cull? You've not booked it in. Someone's going to have to induce a lynx at some point just to take the numbers down.
No, because they're already reproducing heavily. It turns out it's a very, very sexy environment down there that I've got for them. Because it's sort of like soft mushroom bedding.
Well, they've got nothing to dam as well, haven't they? They're basically on holiday.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that based on... I think I saw in the news this week that we... Have we got our first beavers this week?
Yeah, or? They've released some builders...
Some builders.
Well, they are anyway, aren't they? They are nature's builders. Into the wild. Yeah, they're very sweet. Have you seen the footage? There's great footage.
I've not seen footage. Where are they? Where have they put them?
I think it's Soho. I think there's a couple in Soho, a couple in Pimlico, a couple in Fitzrovia. Yeah, it's mainly, they're going to be mainly sort of damming and rerouting traffic, isn't it? It's seen as the last throw of the dice in terms of town
trying
planning.
Trying to save Belgravia.
Trying to save Belgravia. No, so they've been introduced somewhere.
So they were set free on a riverbank in Dorset.
Okay.
So it's not too far from you, was it?
No, next county along.
I've seen some lovely footage, which is available online, of you know, a sort of box being opened up and this beaver just coming out and sniffing the earth and just waddling along. It's lovely. And it waddles around for a bit.
Yeah.
And then it just finds a river, it sort of waddles into it. And I think they basically just start making dams, like, instantly. But it made me think about how, you know, like the way animals are, they instantly do the thing that they do. Yeah. Do you mean, like, do you know what I mean? If that was me, I'd be like,
yeah, I'll just sit here for a bit, maybe look at my phone.
I know I'm supposed to build a dam. I will build a dam. I'm going to, when it feels right.
I've often thought this, like, animals, yeah, they're just doing what they're doing, but then Pam will just, like, chill out for quite a lot of the time, right?
Yeah.
Like, she's dogs just right lie
she
about.
She was at my feet a few minutes ago. She's moved to a different chill zone in the house now. She's chilling.
So is there a level at which animals chill? Like, I can't imagine, like, a mouse chilling.
The nearest human equivalent to what's happened with that beaver is, Ben, imagine if tomorrow morning Chris Packham and Kate Humble smash through your windows, put you in a burlap sack, and then put you into a box.
Yeah.
Then injected you.
It was a period of quarantine after that as well.
Stuck in quarantine for 2 weeks. But then basically transferred you to Edinburgh, let's say, the other side of the country.
Yeah.
And released you into Edinburgh Town Centre. Now, would you just crawl out of that box?
And instantly start podcasting.
You'd want to make connections. You'd want to call home. That's just all it made me think about was...
You think the beaver was taking it well? Taking in its stride.
I'm going to say the behaviour is almost obsessive. I'm not entirely sure how psychologically healthy it is. I mean, because you're in a new area. Mm. Yeah, don't you want to make connections, find out about local amenities?
But maybe that's what plopping the river is. That's plopping in the river.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, it is. It is a bit weird when you imagine that animals just kind of do one thing. They just do the thing that they do, and that's it.
But are they more successful? Because do they get less stressed as a result? Is there less like self-doubt and self-flagellation as a result? Because they're just,
I think that's a good point.
I do what I do. Do you know what I mean? And maybe the more successful humans are like that, like Mick Jagger. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, look, you've got Ben and me sat right in front of you right now.
but Mick Jagger isn't fanning about. He just does what he has to do, and he keeps doing it.
So you're saying that if we were to if Kate Humble and Chris Packham were to shoot Mick Jagger with a sedative, put him into a burlap sack.
Yeah,
I've said burlap twice here, and no one's batting an eye. Does anyone know what that is? It's just one of those words you just say, and people no one ever challenges you. And were to release him in Glasgow, what would he do?
He'd begin performing. He'd begin singing and dancing, and a crowd would build, and before you know it, there's half the city is beholden to him.
I think there is actually a serious point in there, which is that Mick Jagger needs to stop touring.
But I think Mick Jagger can't stop.
He can't.
It's true. His nature. This is like the fable of the frog and the scorpion.
That's right.
Oh, what's that?
Well, they got together and tried to make an album.
Yep.
But it wasn't as...
But the genres weren't compatible.
They couldn't decide on the genre.
Yeah.
What is the fable of the frog and the
that
scorpion?
Is where a scorpion wants to get to the other side of the river and says to the frog, could you give me a lift because I can't swim? And the frog says, no, because you'll sting me. And the scorpion says, why would I do that? If I stung you, then you drown and I drown and we'd both be dead. It'd be ridiculous.
Good point.
The frog says, okay, fair enough. Get on my back, start swimming. As soon as they're halfway across the river, scorpion stings him. And frog goes, why have you done that then? And he says, because it is my nature. Sammy.
And they both die, don't they?
They both perish, yeah.
Yeah, they both perish. Hang on a minute. Frogs can swim.
That's the whole point.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Or a plot twist, depending on at which point you start tuning into the story.
So I thought the scorpion was helping the frog across the river, which seems like a terrible matchup. Great. A lot of ancient fables are told because you can't not get them. They're pure. They're storytelling.
Even the simple mind of a goat herd from 4,000 years ago could comprehend what that meant.
Yeah, quite a sleepy one as well.
Yeah,
and the moral basically is: bastards be bastards.
Bastards be bastards. Players be players. Haters gonna hate. Do you know what I mean?
Beaver's gonna build dams.
Beaver's gonna beave. Yeah.
Beaver's gonna be. So that's a very good point, Mike. And I think you're right. So that's why you're saying beavers don't get stressed because they build dams. In fact, the only way a beaver would be stressed would be if you stopped it building a dam. So if you impede them from doing what their nature is, it's going to get. But if you don't,
whereas we're all trying to do daily life, we're trying to do things that are not in our nature. It is not in my nature to garden, for example.
You know, but you're doing it.
We do have a little garden, so I must maintain the garden.
I mean, the one thing I know about gardening is that people say it's the best thing for your mental health, don't they? And they say that gardening is the job, gardeners are the happiest profession.
But isn't that because you're having an illicit affair with some kind of aristocrat?
Yeah, but apparently there's nothing better for the mental health than having an illicit affair with an aristocrat.
Than banging a baroness.
Than banging a baroness. Or getting bonked by a baron.
Copping off the count. Whatever it may be.
Yeah. You're being fed incredibly delicate, beautiful Viennese fancies.
Yeah.
From one end, aren't you?
And that you pretend to be unfamiliar with, but you've danced this dance a thousand times.
You're a gardener.
Yeah.
You have a set of gardening tools, but you've got twice as many sex toys, let's face it, haven't you?
Ivory sex toys.
You've got ivory sex toys.
Uh-oh.
Lewd content warning. Lewd content. Sex barrows.
Sex barrows.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sex mulch. Sex. An array of different sized sex.
It's quite racy this episode, isn't it?
Sex trowels. And of course, you've got a shed.
What's sexier than a shed?
What is sexier than a shed? And why is it that the windows of a shed are always a bit sort of steamy, aren't they? They're always sort of. You can never really see through them.
They're always a bit. They're all translucent, aren't they?
I think being a gardener would be nice.
You're working outdoors, you're working in nature.
Yeah. It's emerging from the undergrowth and then telling the baron about something you've seen that morning. And the crows be busy this morning, sir.
Yes, you read the signs of nature.
Ah, yes, young Finagree. Thank you for what you've done for me and my wonderful garden. Please come inside so I may pork you.
And feed you this fantastic new Viennese delicacy. It's called a croissant rond. It's a mixture between a sausage roll and a croissant. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how Barnaby does it. That's Barnaby, my baker, who has the second happiest profession. Because I'm also bonking Barnaby. Yeah. Well, look, I think you're exposed to the sun's rays, which is supposed to be good for you. You're also in tune with nature's cycles. Spring. The bees. Or, summer. The bees. Of course, you've got to look forward to autumn bees. And then, of course.
And the winter beavers.
The winter beavers. But yeah, no, it's lovely, isn't it? Obviously, in the spring, the bulbous roots begin to. Mm-hmm. Go to their pre-fruiting stage, don't they? So things start to swell. There's a great swelling, and it's lovely to be around swelling.
Yeah, and the flax will welt.
The flax starts to welt.
The bulbs begin to seep.
Bulbs begin to seep. The little mini helicopters start falling off oak trees.
And the danders are on the wisp.
Danders are on the wisp. There's hot pollen. There's hot pollen just everywhere you look.
Yeah.
There's sap. You've got lovely sticky sap all over your feet.
There's lichen in your eyes.
An absolute plethora of respiratory conditions being triggered by all of these things.
And the bark sloughing is months away.
Ah, yes.
Still got that to look forward to.
Yeah.
I've got lots of bulbs planted.
Oh, yeah.
My partner created a bulbzania.
What is that?
which is like a big pot with different bulbs that have different times of coming up, and then you put them in different layers in the pot.
Slather the whole thing in
hot horse shit.
And then you serve that just with a light, like a light salad, isn't it? That's all you need. And you'll be incredibly ill, but the hot shit that fires out of you will be...
All the colours of the rainbow. And the neighbours will hear you cry, Balmzania! For many miles.
I used to watch a lot of gardening TV shows. They used to be a bit of a mainstay. I'm not sure if they are anymore. Things like Ground Force with Alan Titchmarsh. Do you remember that?
You would watch them?
Yeah. As a kind of kid, basically.
Yeah.
I'd be watching
Charlie Dimmock.
I remember watching a TV show which had the builder from Ground Force.
Yeah.
Whose name was that? I think it was Tommy Walsh. He was on a weight loss TV show.
Yeah.
And he was going, thing is, I work with my hands all day. I'm busy. I'm physical. I don't understand why I'm putting on this weight. He was like 25 stone. Couldn't work it out.
Yeah.
Because he was digging and what have you all day. And they said, okay, well, let's look at your diet then. And let's see if we can fine tune it and see what's causing the problem, Tommy. And he was like, all right. And they followed him around for a day. And in the evening, he went to the pub and he drank a pint of Baileys.
What?
Do you realize that's about like 16 pints of milk in a Baileys? Because it's sort of...
It's just cream. It's intense. Alcoholic cream.
It's sort of like intensely dense creaminess, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they just said, well, if you just didn't do that, it probably would make quite a profound difference to you.
And you'd massively extend your life expectancy as well.
Okay, time to read your emails.
Yes, please.
If you'd like to email us, the email address is 3beansaladpod@gmail.com. Do send in your gardening tips. We normally play the email jingle, but we've had one sent in. And it's from Laura.
Thank you, Laura.
Thanks, Laura.
Hi, Beans. I'm a Brit who has lived in Sweden for 3 years.
Nice. Mm.
I thought it was time I sent you a Swedish jingle.
Ooh.
My Swedish is terrible. So forgive the sentence structure and pronunciation, but it gets the message over, especially the postmaster's response.
Nice.
Please excuse the singing. I'm in no way a musician, and this is a million miles outside of my comfort zone.
A lot of caveats.
A lot of apologies going into this.
It's a very caveat heavy.
Yeah, Laura, no, good for you. I mean, yeah, Laura's shown great courage.
Yeah. So let's have a listen to that.
God morgon, postmästare. Något för mig? Bara lite gammal shit. När du skickar ett e-mail representerar det framsteg som en robot som skå en häst. Ge mig en hof, min vackra häst.
Can I say, one of the things I love about the Nordic languages,
yeah,
generally you can't understand any of it, but occasionally there's just a word which is clearly,
yeah,
you know what it is. So it'll be like sausage, does but not at all, a bit of mustard. Exactly.
Yeah.
I like that about it.
I like the way that Good morning, postmaster turns out to be something like good morning, postmaster.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I like it when it happens.
Wonderful. Very nice. Well, I was about to say the only bit of Swedish I know, but maybe it's Danish. Maybe it's similar. It's festklad, which I like, which means like just dressed up for a party.
Oh, that's nice.
Festklad.
Oh, makes sense, doesn't it?
Well, the one everyone knows is Hygge, obviously.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But the other one that I know is Dub Hervikjetsnure.
Oh,
which I believe is Danish.
Yeah.
Du behöver inte att snöra.
Yeah.
Which means you don't have to tie the laces up.
Which, of course, is an idiomatic expression meaning
you genuinely don't need to tie the laces up.
It's very direct. It's very direct idioms.
Incredibly direct.
Was that from your time trying to buy slip-ons in Copenhagen?
Yeah. It was a very, very dark time for me. Two problems. One was I was based in Denmark, and yep, I was trying to dressed like a Tory MP.
You may know someone who's also trying to buy slip-ons in Copenhagen. Get in touch on the Henry Becker hotline today.
No, it was because it was from when I was selling self-tying shoelaces. When I was a toy demonstrator, which I think I'm sure I've definitely talked about on the pod, I sold Butthead, which is a game where you catch balls on your head.
Hello.
Using Velcro strips that are attached to a swimming cap type thing.
It's when Velcro was invented. There have been a host of applications since.
Yeah.
That's where it started.
But the core use was leisure cranial ball adhesion. But I was also selling something called self-tying shoelaces. Now, so those were, they were like in the shape of an old-fashioned telephone cable. So, but highly elasticated. So the idea is you'd thread them through your shoes, and then instead of tying them, you just kind of yank them up and then let go, and they kind of bounce back into place. Can you imagine?
Yeah, nice.
Which, it turned out, had the double whammy of A, looking shit, and B, cutting off the blood supply to your feet.
But the Danes loved it. So can you say that phrase in like every language on earth?
I did learn it in quite a few languages, but Danish is, for some reason, that's the one that I've remembered, because it was the hardest one. I had to put the most work into remembering that one. Du behøver ikke at snøre, you don't need to tie a knot, which is also, the only other time you can use that is if you're advising a Danish couple on whether to get married or not. and you think that actually, for one reason or another,
and you're familiar with the legal ramifications in Denmark,
yeah,
and how that affects things like their pension,
exactly,
state benefits, and so on. Yeah.
Also, for example, if you're talking to a Danish seafarer, but you're trying to sell him a speedboat,
yeah,
one of the advantages is du behøver ikke at snøre. You don't have to tie any knots anymore because it's a non-rope based technology. But yeah,
I see.
Yeah, there aren't that many apps. Well, actually, there are more applications than you at first think.
Did you ever use that phrase on a real Dane? And how did it go? Like, did Sandy Toksvig come through the shop?
I did, and it was quite a good bit of patter to have learned a bit of Danish. But the product wasn't great, to be fair. And what would happen is, the first 2 weeks I was selling loads, and then more and more people were coming back in and complaining about various issues, often that they were just too tight. Because with a knot, with a traditional knot, you can control how tight you want it. Whereas with a self-tying shoelace, which is what they were called, you can't. It's the tightness of
Elastic. And made with a material that a paramedic can't cut through. They don't have the tools.
Exactly.
Well, thanks for that jingle. It was fantastic.
Yeah, thanks, Laura.
Let's read out an email. This is from Katie.
Hello, Katie.
From the USA. Hey, nice. Beans. In a recent episode released sometime around Christmas, Mike mentioned that he had chosen to cook his family's Christmas meal. As an avid home cook, I'd love to know how it went.
There's not a great deal to report. I was played like a harp, basically.
Oh, wow.
Who by? Santa.
There's loads of really good cooks in the family, as I think I mentioned.
So they thought too many cooks spoil the broth, therefore give it to the one person that can't cook.
There was a rising sense of anxiety on Christmas Eve that I didn't realise you're supposed to start on Christmas Eve, unless you're mad.
Yeah. But, Mike, I did actually try and tell you all this, I think, when talking about it on the podcast.
I know, but I can't be expected to listen to everything.
I'm pretty sure I was uncomfortable with how chilled out you were being about things.
Yeah, and I still was on Christmas Eve.
It's just not the right response emotionally. You're like a beaver who's being released out of a box and not trying to build a dam. That's just wrong. Yeah, there's something wrong with you. You probably either need to be put down or stuffed and put in a museum.
Well, that was, yeah. And well, the straw that broke the camel's back was when I was discovered by one of these very good cooks in the living room, Googling not gravy, as in how to make a gravy, but the word origins of the word gravy.
Oh, you were going etymology on it.
You were going etymological on it.
I'd gone down a Google rabbit hole, and that's what the plan was to Google about making gravy, but I'd been diverted, and I was just on the sofa, just idly looking up.
Was your theory that a recipe is in a way a definition? Like, if you know the definition of gravy, then you know how to make gravy.
The point was, I was immensely distracted, and at that point, that person offered to help. And they sold it to me very, very well, as if they were a kind of sous chef type person. Got me started. But they slowly basically gained control. And as it got closer and closer to serving time, at that point when it's there's 8,000 things to do at the same time. I had no idea. There was no doubt who was in charge in the kitchen. And this person basically saved Christmas.
I'm not sure if you got played like a harp or if they got played like a harp.
They
feels like you did quite well out of it. You didn't have to make the Christmas meal.
I wanted to feel like I had made Christmas meal. I wanted to give these people a break because they always cook at Christmas. That didn't happen. Okay. It wasn't relaxing for them. It was more stressful for them, for me to be. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Did you take the credit, though?
Everyone knew. I mean, I think everyone probably knew. The only person who genuinely tried to say, well done, Mike, was probably my mother. But she, you know.
So you were sort of puppet chef.
She's blinded by love. Yeah. Everyone else knew what was going on.
But at the Christmas dinner itself, you could wow people by saying, guys, do you know that gravy comes from the Greek grev, which means to warm up meat that we took out the oven too long ago?
Oh, yeah, my small talk was off the chain. So, well, thanks for asking, Katie. So the meal was good, but it was nothing to do with me.
And because it's going to annoy me, I'm going to have to look up where the word gravy comes from. Sorry.
Grave in French means serious.
Yeah.
Is it to do with that?
So it says here, from Middle English, gravy or grievy, probably from greaves.
Is it grievance? Is it how people would settle grievances?
Gravy.
By that's pouring nice. Hot gravy on each other.
Yeah. So apparently greaves is the sediment of melted tallow.
Yeah. Wow, what's tallow?
Beef fat.
Fat.
Oh, God.
Or it could be from the old French grave, which was a misspelling of grané, which means stew.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's not very good, is it, Mike?
Yeah.
That's not lighting up.
No, it's disappointing.
But the meal went off well in the end.
No thanks to me, yes.
Yeah. So you were like a puppet dictator who didn't...
I was more like the your sort of leader. Four-year-old, your toddler king.
Toddler, classic toddler king.
There was a sort of wily, experienced regent in place.
Familiar
with the corridors of power.
Yeah.
As I prattled about throwing bits of cheese and cauliflower around the place.
Yeah.
And said, I made this, didn't I, mummy?
Exactly. Yeah.
Didn't I, mummy? Yeah. I made it!
And everyone has to go along with that because they know that you can execute them on a whim.
Whim, yeah, the smallest whim, yeah.
Well, congratulations. This is a very long email we've had from Rachel in Cork.
Hello, Rachel and Cork.
Hi, Rachel.
So strap in for what's described as a tortoise anecdote.
Oh, right. Cork, of course, where Henry may or may not have been.
That's true. Yeah, we still don't know for sure.
When I was 13, my parents rented a holiday home in the Mulranny, County Mayo, a very quiet little village on the west coast of Ireland. My brother, who was probably about 11 at the time, and I quickly discovered that there wasn't much to do in Mulranny, aside from walk to the local shop or explore the Macar Plain at low tide. My brother chose to cope by spending a lot of his time sitting on the picnic bench outside the house, which boasted the privilege of being built in a little hollow overshadowed by newer, bigger houses with Wi-Fi.
Uh-huh.
One day, my brother was sitting at this table when something fell onto it from above. He looked at it for a moment, assuming it was a rock. Then it started to move. It was a tortoise, which had seemingly either fallen from the sky or been thrown from a passing car.
What? Neither of which are possible. By the way, can I say, if your tortoise does guff in the car on a family holiday, you put it in the glove box for half an hour. Don't
launch it out the window.
You'd have to have it. Press it into its shell, shove it down.
If you click the head in, the legs and arms, they sort of click in.
It should be
a
single movement if all the hinges are working properly.
Inevitably, my brother and I begged my parents to keep it.
Yeah.
If somebody was going to be daft enough to toss away a perfectly decent tortoise, there was no reason why we shouldn't come out of that situation with something to show for it. My dad disagreed. In his defence, we were on holidays with no access to any of the necessary tortoise care equipment. However, my dad then pulled rank and made an executive decision about the tortoise, which to this day, neither my brother nor I, nor my dad have ever understood. My dad decided we would release the tortoise into the wild. We put the tortoise into a pillowcase. We walked to the Machar Plain. The tide was coming in, so pools of water were beginning to form, and we comforted ourselves in the knowledge that our new friend would soon be swimming happily among the fish.
They're sort of using that in the mafia sense of that phrase. Why did they decide to do a mafia-style execution on this tortoise?
I don't think any of us fully recognise the difference between tortoise and turtle.
Yes.
Yes.
We found a little pool and released our aggressive new friend into what we thought was the best place for him.
No wonder he's being aggressive.
Then waved a sad goodbye and returned to the holiday home. When we arrived there, though, we noticed something odd. Our neighbours, in the big houses next door, were processing very slowly around their house with their heads down.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
My brother and I thought nothing of it and went inside. So the rest of the story is what was related to me by my dad.
It's have you seen this tortoise posters, isn't it?
The neighbours called to my dad.
Oh, God.
Had he seen a tortoise? They had let their beloved pet tortoise outside to munch on grass and he disappeared.
No, but I have seen a turtle that matches its description. That's weird. What are the chances?
My dad, no doubt panicking, answered that no, he hadn't seen a tortoise, but he'd keep an eye out. Then he immediately raced back to the beach where the tide was swiftly coming in.
Oh, my God, this is tense.
I am happy to say that he did locate the tortoise, who, according to him, was quite happy in his new environment. That's bollocks.
That's not true.
My dad returned the tortoise to his family, who were very relieved to see him. My dad did not tell them the full story of the tortoise's adventure. I hope the tortoise lived long enough to come to terms with what was undoubtedly a very traumatic afternoon. Thanks for making a great podcast. I hope Egg turns up soon. All the best, Rachel in Cork.
Rachel, thank you. I was so pleased that had a happy ending. I really didn't think that was going to have a happy ending.
But she's left us with some really massive questions, right? How did the tortoise that was left next door...
The appearance is the main one, isn't it?
Yeah. How did it...
Unless they weren't the first family that had made that mistake with that tortoise that day, and the first family that made that mistake, rather than just giving it back, sort of did a drive-by return, lugged it out of the car.
Or maybe someone had found the tortoise and thought it was an owl and released it onto the roof of the house.
Try to launch it somehow.
It'll start flying if you throw... It's that thing... You've got to believe it's like a bird when it's fledgling, isn't it?
Wings all hatch out of the shell.
So the mystery is how did it... Because it sort of landed on their table out in the garden, was it?
Yeah.
That is weird, isn't it? Launched.
I think it's possible your little brother was lying about... Like, he saw a tortoise on the ground.
The cynic, Bonjo the cynic.
Stole it and then said to his dad, this fell from the sky, can we keep it? Do you not think that's the most...
Bonjo.
Anyway... All's well that ends well with that one.
Yeah, maybe have a conversation with your brother, Rachel, and let us know if
he's full of bollocks.
If he fesses up, yeah.
Jules has emailed, may I be the 7,000th person to email in to say that I still hitch my trousers from the top when I sit down?
Oh, good.
Well done.
I believed it's to make more space around the knees. Otherwise, the trousers stretch over time and you get front knee bags that ruin your nice, smart creases.
Mm.
I also crossed my legs. I was not alive in the 70s, Jules.
Does it mean?
Jules is answering the questions ahead of time there, which I have a lot of time for. Thank you, Jules.
Mm.
So Jules was presumably born in the 40s, but was in cryogenic storage in the 70s. Is that what Jules is saying?
Or did some kind of time machine business?
Or did some sort of time machine business?
Yeah, we don't know.
So that's a reference to the fact we were talking about how in the TV show Terry Wogan and his guests, and this is a 70s-80s thing, we thought would hitch up their trousers by holding onto the trouser around the thigh. Pulling it, and because of the way trousers are designed, you can pull the bottom fabric using the top fabric, can't you?
Yeah.
And originally there was handles. If you look back at the first trousers had handles on them, didn't they? But obviously now they don't anymore. But you still can use the top of your trousers to hitch up. These things always do.
Yeah.
But maybe going forward, I'll start hitching my trousers when I sit down.
Yeah.
It could be your thing, couldn't it?
Well, it could change my life.
Yeah.
We've had lots of emails about rumpkins.
Oh, yeah.
Which are these sort of old-fashioned hardware stores.
Yes.
You get.
So I did find my rumpkins. Have we talked about that?
Well, maybe tell us now.
Well, I needed to find a tiny stainless steel metal nut to fix my kitchen scales. And it was too small an item for me to buy online. It was too small an item for me to buy in a Screwfix or a big retailer. I was just too embarrassed about it. And then I found... I don't know if Ben mentioned it or it came up that I should find my Rumpkins, which is the local sort of just old school, messy kind of...
Family run,
DIY general stuff shop that sells mainly varnish.
Yeah. And a kind of rat poison that was made illegal in the 50s.
Yeah, so 50s rat poison and just like 200 different shades of varnish.
Yeah.
And I'd never noticed it before, but because you'd planted the idea, I spotted my rumpkins, and I think they're everywhere at these shops. You just don't really notice them because your eye kind of tunes them out because you don't.
Well, they don't want to be noticed.
They don't want to be noticed because if they get noticed, they have to start paying tax. <don't they?
laughs> But also, when you need your rumpkins, you'll see your rumpkins.
When you need your rumpkins, yeah. You'll see your rumpkins. I was at that moment, and my rumpkins appeared in front of me, and the windows were begrimed. There was a sign in one of the windows saying "back soon" or something.
Yeah,
just something just written on an old bit of cardboard and stuck in the window. Yeah. It's very much a kind of back in 10 minutes economy.
But you know, it might have been back from the Napoleonic Wars, for exactly, all we know, yeah. When it was originally written.
Yeah, yeah. Went in, just loads of varnishes, loads of paint, loads of dusty old bits and bobs, just total chaos.
8,000 tiny drawers.
8,000 tiny drawers. I think there might have been a little bit of black market key cutting going on. Strictly off books.
Some domestic poison that could bring down a brontosaurus.
Yeah. Yeah. And Rumpkins was there. Mr. Rumpkin was there. And it was easy as you like. I bought a single miniature stainless steel gnat.
Yeah.
For like 45p.
Two bobs and a farthing.
Two bobs and a farthing. And he put it through his old-fashioned till machine, which he had.
Yeah.
It was a great moment. And you know what? I went back the next day to find Rumpkins. And of course, he was gone. There was a Ryman's and a Bookies.
Thank God.
Thank goodness that was okay. But of course, once that Rumpkin sells someone a stainless steel screw, he packs up his stuff. He gets back into his cart. Yeah. And he sets off, doesn't he, across the country.
Back to 1913.
Back to 1913, where he's from. And that's why he had the sign in the window saying, back in 10 minutes, because he's gone to the future a lot of the time.
They
go where they're needed. Yeah. They're where they're needed.
So we've had lots of Rumpkins emails. This is from Richard from Ipswich.
Hello, Richard. By the way, a little nickname for this guy. You could almost call him Ipswich. Couldn't you? Yeah. Harmless. Go on.
I'm from Ipswich, and until 2004, there was a Rumpkin-style shop on 4 streets called Martin and Newby. It also has the glorious distinction of having had the world's 5th oldest working light bulb.
Is that from the era where they went on forever, didn't they? That's what they say. The first light bulbs never ran out.
It sadly stopped working in 2001.
Blimey, so it did last for ages.
And was in the men's toilets. Why does it have a toilet? A rumpkin doesn't need to soil.
Rumpkins shouldn't, no.
No, because he should have a fully varnished arse. So that everything's kept in by the varnish.
I mean, he would see indoor toilets as being a sort of aberration.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we've had an email from Martin.
Hello, Martin.
About his local Rumpkins.
Yeah.
I had reason to visit the Rumpkins last year to get some keys cut. I went in, the bell above the door rang, and footsteps sounded from upstairs as the proprietor made his way down to assist me. In that time, I spotted a box with some of the most disturbing words I've ever seen, and I snapped a photo. See attached.
Oh, God.
Holland's special pie fat. Is that what it says?
So for manufacturing purposes only.
So it's a kind of blue canister on wheels, which contains sort of super...
Special pie fat.
Super compressed fat, it sounds
special
like.
Special pie fat.
Blimey.
Oh, man.
That's terrible. That's a classic Rumpkins kind of thing, isn't it? It's not got any brand name
so
attached.
So many applications.
So many.
It says Holland special pie fat for manufacturing purposes only. What does that prevent you from doing?
You have to manufacture something with it, otherwise...
Yeah.
You can't eat handfuls of the pie fat.
You can't eat handfuls. Also, it's got classic Rumpkin stuff, and so it's got nothing... There's no official brand name or logo. So therefore, there's no paperwork attached to this stuff. It hasn't gone through the process that we would have had to have gone through to make our own mustard, for example.
No, and the factory where they made it, or the abattoir where they made it, is shut down the second they've sent that box away.
Yeah, exactly. You shouldn't put fat in a canister. If you do, it should have more than one wheel on it, because that canister's only got one wheel. It's got one central wheel, which means it's mobile, but not steady.
Not controllable.
Not controllable, exactly. It's the worst case scenario. The other thing which worries me is it's Hollands without an apostrophe. Now, I don't think that's a spelling mistake. I think we're in a world where there may be another Holland.
Well, it's multi-universe theory, isn't it?
It's multi-universe theory.
Yeah, where they do, Holland where they don't grow tulips, they grow pie fat.
Yeah.
Let's finish off with a final Rumpkin story. This is from Australia.
Okay.
And as a result, it's got a kind of salty edge that we expect from the Australians.
Yeah.
Hello, Beans. I grew up in a village in Worcestershire called Arley Kings, where there was a rumpkin shop called Afgray's, and the man who ran it was rumoured to be a chicken fucker. Kind regards, Pete from Perth, West Australia.
Yeah, lovely stuff. I mean,
but he'd get you the right sprocket.
You the right sprocket.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't judge you for buying a tiny nut.
No.
And he also wouldn't expect you to judge him for having sex with poultry.
Thanks to everyone who signed up on our Patreon.
Yes, thank you.
You can get video versions of the episodes if that's what you so wish. Also, bonus episodes. We keep going on our month off on Patreon. And if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout out from Mike in the Sean Bean Lounge, where Mike spent the weekend.
I sure did.
And it was fill a massive inflatable Queen Victoria with minestrone soup weekend, wasn't it?
It was, thank you, Ben. And here's my report. It was fill a massive inflatable Queen Victoria with minestrone soup weekend at the Sean Bean Lounge. Joe Rowan, Rhiannon Pettiford, Pip and Chip were tasked with sourcing the giant inflatable and were convinced by Valerie Clark and Jane Sullivan to get the full giant inflatable House of Hanover package so they could make a bit of cash on the side. They sold the Otto the First to Matteo, Olivia McVilly and Nicholas Bellington, who wanted to use it to repel burglars, while the giant inflatable Ernest Augustus was bought by a cabal consisting of Samuel Kears, Mark Taylor, Hlinos Evans, Super Lucy and Jamie Stewart to stun overly garrulous pharmacists into silence. Florence Townend, Guy Kantorovich, Lou Dunn, Brian McDonald and Alex P. took the Princess Victoria Louise of Prussia to help them get backstage passes at Shakira concerts. Kieran Jenkins, Kevin Lux, Caroline Johnston, Kat Bexley, Liz Lissing and Goggin the Gog floated the John Frederick Prince of Callenberg at 4,000 feet to break the world record for the highest inflatable minor royal, knocking Hammerslammer the Thunderpacker off his pedestal for floating a Prince Bishop of Osnabrück to 3,500 feet last year. Although that craft, of course, was controversial, partly as it was manned by Tom Kennedy, Ian Leask, AJ Tarbuck, George Allardyce and Rich Thomas, and partly as those Sean Bean loungers cut their moorings and used the craft to defect to Cuba. The giant inflatable Queen Victoria itself was inflated with a series of teats in the shape of a lizard's head that are found on the back of any royal. Team Puff included Claire Woods, Eva, Kirtley, Elsie Brewster, Thomas Elsing and Catherine B. Harris, with Joanne, Sarah, Daniel Organischek, Zoe Allen and Chris Cummings on puncture repair and teat prolapse restoration. Andrew Stanieri, Victoria, Luke Hope and Gemini Bartletto were charged with dressing the Queen Vic and chose a velour leisure suit that Hamish McNally had accidentally ordered in the wrong size for Sean Bean and that had been sitting doing nothing in the Sean Bean storage mega hangar for the last year, being guarded from moths by Sarah Reed, Sebastian Moichheim and Aubrey Westbourne. The crown was assembled from interwoven gold-painted volunteers including Chris Mack, Lawrence Brown, Jonathan Kay, Jared Miles, Nick Davidson and Wayne Marsh. Meanwhile, the soup was prepared under the guidance of this year's honorary soup captains Jess Tastic Hartman and Stephen Green, who had decided the high volume of vegetables required should not be sourced by buying high numbers of ordinary vegetables, but by sourcing low numbers of unusually large vegetables. The vegetable intelligence wing of the Sean Bean Defence Ministry was activated, aka Gillian Mondegrande, Amanda Aspinall, Ashley Knight and Richard Wilkinson, and prize-winning vegetables were located from across the nation. Joel Nesbitt, Ollie B and Elizabeth Royce managed to seize an extremely long carrot from Shropshire without firing a shot. Kerry Thomas, Thomas Tom S, Chris Curson and David Elliott didn't manage to avoid collateral damage, but did get hold of a really fat celery from an allotment in Salisbury. Simran Thethi and Hannah Haskell broke a giant courgette out of a vault in Hatton Garden, and Adam Garner, William Atwall, Luke Maguire and Amy Barker hacked a crypto onion from the Swedish consulate and managed to ransom a nuclear engineer in exchange for the famous Hinkley Point cannelloni colosso bean. Chainsaw chefs Isabel HB, Hannah and Adrian Beaumont set to work at Chopin and a Dyson, while Matthew Lambert heated the maxi pan using all of the possessions of Cat Fisher, David Taylor and James Baker as fuel. Holly Walker realised there was a pancetta crisis, but cleverly tricked Luke Mendoza, Jamie Isaac, Simon Schilliker and Matt Seibert into the Sean Bean lard-on machine by claiming it was a ghost train and no one was any the wiser. Herbs, purees, pasta stock and incantations were taken care of by John C., James and Gary Williams. The soup was cooked until it was hot enough that Alan Batcup had to jump out. And finally in came the piping team to fill the inflatable Queen Victoria with the minestrone. And that team consisted of Charlotte Cates, Tom Bright, Lauren Weeks and Willett Guzzle, all of whom thanked their lucky stars that the inflatable, like any genuine royal, came complete with a two-way anal control valve. Thanks all.
Okay, let's finish the show with a version of our theme tune, sent in by one of you lot. It's from Ollie. Ollie writes, one of my favourite parts of the show is hearing other listeners' artistic voices through the profound medium of theme song and jingle covers. On that note, please find attached a version of your theme tune in the classic Hollywood orchestral style.
Ooh.
As performed by the Bremen International Festival Symphony Orchestra of Bremen.
Very good.
Oh, wow. Sounds good.
I imagined while writing it that it could perhaps accompany footage of Indiana Jones swinging from his whip over the gaping maw of a giant crab while being chased by a horde of angry, sexy cassowaries before falling into the loving arms of Nigel Havers. Best wishes, Ollie.
Thanks, Ollie.
Which would be a very better storyline than any of the ones in the last two films from that franchise.
Ouch!
Ooh, spicy.
All right, see you next time. Bye.
Bye.